Must bring countries together to protect the Southern Ocean.
Greening trade, ocean protection and governance.
Greening agri-food,
making agricultural production sustainable.
The trade, environment and development nexus.
Rethinking Europe.
Hi, and welcome to Rethinking Europe, a podcast from Europe Jacques Delors, unveiling the nuts and bolts of environmental sustainability. My name is Gail Rego, and I am your host. This podcast will combine both stories and perspectives of junior policymakers and European residents on the one hand, and senior policy experts and EU decision makers on the other. The podcast is split into two parts, starting with a first-person narrative and followed by an interview. Let's get started. Today, we are going to be talking about the EUDR, or EU's Deforestation-Free Products Regulation. Among the growing evidence and public awareness around the negative socio-environmental impacts associated with agri-food trade, such as deforestation, governments have been taking measures to counter these negative impacts. The EU has been at the forefront of these efforts, given the EU's significant contribution to global deforestation and forest degradation based on consumption needs. One key action taken by the EU is the EU Regulation on Deforestation-Free Products, or the EUDR, a landmark regulation that has broken new ground. I'll be speaking with Marianne Ketunen, senior policy expert and advisor working with the Trade, Development and the Environment Hub and the UN Conference on Trade and Development, BioTrade Programme. We will talk about the role of trade as a driver of transformative change towards sustainability, the EU's efforts in this regard, focusing on the EUDR and how the EU can best support small producers in resource-rich countries to prepare for the regulation, which will apply at the end of 2024. But before that, we'll hear from Luiz Nakagawa, Brazilian researcher who has been tackling deforestation in the Amazon. Brazil is a large producer of several commodities covered by the EUDR. Luiz will share the different approaches needed to tackle deforestation in Brazil effectively and how the EU's regulation has a part to play in ensuring sustainable trade for both sides, as well as preventing the further marginalization and isolation of smallholder farmers and small producers in Brazil.
I'm Luiz Nakagawa, a Brazilian researcher from São Paulo City, where I live currently. Although my degree is in biology, I built my background in governance, sustainability, and rural development. I have a master's and PhD in energy, development, and sustainability. I work for Brazilian Center for Analysis and Planning, SEBRAP, and at the Institute of Forestry and Agricultural Management and Certification, IMAFLORA. SEBRAP is a research institute in social sciences and policies. And IMAFLORA is a not-for-profit organization aiming to combine conservation and production through good practices and certification systems. In the last 10 years, I have been working in NGOs to tackle deforestation in the Amazon in the Brazilian savanna, also known as Cerrado, through different approaches with meat packers, traders, retailers, and producers. I decided to study the two biggest value chains linked to deforestation, beef and soy. I understood that the socioeconomic environment impacts of soy and cattle expansion are not homogeneous, and I also understood that there is not only one pattern for deforestation, but many. And what we have considered as sustainable solutions have created an exclusion of those who are in the forest, in the rural areas. In the Brazilian Amazon, most of deforestation happens in public lands, with the illegal exploitation of timber with high value, followed by the cleaning of the area, usually with cut and burn, then with the growing of grass, and finally with cattle occupation. Once the land is occupied with agriculture, it's easy to regularize it. which increases the price and attracts big producers and traders. And with the investment in infrastructure, you have roads, electricity, services, etc., the whole package. In the Cerrado, the dynamic is quite different because most of the land is already privately owned. The impacts of deforestation are very well known. Besides the loss of biodiversity, the exposure of soil, and the decrease in the volume of rivers and watersheds, we also have more emissions of GHG, which affects climate change. It's worth mentioning the increase in land grabbing, land speculation, migration, violence, and conflicts, especially against indigenous people, traditional communities, and smallholder farmers. In the early 2000s, through joint work between the federal government and the civil society organization, public and private actions were created that managed to reduce deforestation in the Amazon. One of the most relevant examples is the action plan for the preventing and control of deforestation in the legal Amazon. As in 2025, the COP30 will be in Brazil, there is a huge effort from NGOs, government, and research institutes combined with the private companies to design more ambitious goals. The EUDR is a legislative proposal to ensure that products such as cocoa, coffee, beef, timber, palm oil, soy, and others traded in or exported from the EU are deforestation-free and produced under conventions that guarantee human rights. My understanding is that EUDR won't reduce deforestation, at least in Brazil, because most of our agricultural commodities linked to deforestation are exported to countries in Asia and in the Middle East. However, the producers can be split into three groups. The first one, those who see this as an opportunity to add value to their product or reach better markets. The second group is regarding those who say that they can't prove their production because they don't have technology, knowledge, or financial resources to adapt their practices. And the third one, those who don't care about anything and will sell to anyone that don't have social environmental requirements. Small and medium farmers, especially in the Amazon, will need more support to adapt their activities, especially financial support. As cattle production in Brazil is more related to family farming, the producers face several challenges in implementing sustainable practices in their properties. On the opposite way, soy producers don't face the same challenges because this type of production requires more technology, investment, and land. For both sectors, the biggest challenge is the traceability. One of the EUDR requirements is the capacity to prove that the origin of that product is not related to deforestation. We already have systems and tools in place in Brazil. One important example is the Beef on Track program. It aims to monitor, report, and verify the purchases made by meat packers that have operations in the Amazon. Another system, but at the regional level, is the Green Label, the Selo Verde in Pará State, which provides enhanced batch traceability. In the soy case, most producers do not adhere to those mechanisms, and the market uptake is limited. I would like to propose a reflection on the legacy that EUDR can leave. The first opportunity is that this process can create a movement to invite China and the US to also elevate the level of their social environmental requirements. And the second is that the EU can really contribute to a more sustainable and just trade worldwide by supporting financially producing countries in the global south to implement sustainable practices, at the same time promoting the inclusion of those more vulnerable. My concerns that this process would create a niche in the market and as a consequence create more exclusion of those who don't have the capacity financially or technically to assure their production or to monitor their suppliers.
We've just heard from Luiz Nakagawa about deforestation its impacts in the Brazilian Amazon rainforests, and her hopes and concerns around the EUDR and how it could play out in the Global South. Now we'll be speaking with Marianne Ketunen, who is a senior policy expert and advisor currently working with the Trade, Development and the Environment Hub and the UN Conference on Trade and Development BioTrade Programme. Hi, Marianne, and welcome to Rethinking Europe. We're so glad to be able to speak with you today about the EU's deforestation-free products regulation. Could you start by introducing yourself briefly, especially in relation to this topic?
Hello, Gail. It's very nice to be with you today, and thank you for inviting me. Linking to today's topic, the UNEP-WCMC in Cambridge is leading a project called Trade Hub. Trade Hub stands for Trade, Development and the Environment Hub, and is a UK-funded global research initiative. It's been running for 5 years with focus on agriculture supply chains, their impacts on people and biodiversity, and how to make international agriculture supply chains more sustainable. And that is basically then what leads me to deforestation and also the EU deforestation-free regulation and its implications to the world.
Thanks for that, Marianne. Global food systems are responsible for a quarter of greenhouse gas emissions, and they're a key driver of biodiversity loss. It is also estimated that the expansion of agricultural land accounts for approximately 90% of worldwide deforestation, and that commercial agriculture accounts for 70% of tropical deforestation. Marianne, could you tell us a little bit more about the negative socio-environmental impacts associated with the trade of agricultural commodities?
If you look at first the social side of things, many of these supply chains, they only benefit those who are operating either on a large scale or those who are further along on the supply chain, like retailers. And they fail to benefit those who are operating in a small scale and at the start of a chain, particularly smallholder farmers. And this is a big problem because across commodities and across countries, smallholders occupy a very large proportion of the production. 90% of coffee in Tanzania is done by smallholders. And there are many difficulties smallholders are regularly facing as part of these global supply chains. And they include low farm gate prices, fluctuations in prices, and that's combined with low bargaining power. There's also lack of access to good quality seedlings, fertilizers, technology. There's lack of access to finance to upgrade operations by smallholders, including suitable loans. There is, because of this, a lack of choice to shift from one commodity to another because you're part of this global market dominated world. And also, the smallholders are often at the receiving end of land grabbing and displacement, especially indigenous peoples and traditional communities. And then we can also look at the environmental element of negative impacts of supply chains as they are currently in the agriculture sector. If there are not enough national safeguards in place, or if those national safeguards in the producer country are not enforced properly, trade can amplify negative environmental impacts of agriculture production, including pollution, soil erosion, water shortages, and deforestation. Agriculture is a key driver for global deforestation. Most of the human-caused permanent removal of forests occurs in the tropics.
Could you highlight some of the key global initiatives that are aimed at addressing or mitigating some of these adverse impacts that you've just talked about?
We certainly have some of those. But then I'd also like to draw some attention to the multilateral and unilateral initiatives at the global level. The COP26, a couple of years ago in Glasgow, foresaw the Glasgow Leaders Declaration on Forest and Land Use coming out. And this was followed by the Forest and Climate Leaders Partnership in COP27 a year later. So these are the highest of level global acknowledgements by the heads of states that, you know, something needs to be done in this space. But we are still waiting to see and judge any concrete achievements of these pledges or initiatives. Slightly more concretely, the COP26 did also initiate a forest, agriculture and commodity trade, FACT for short, FACT dialogue, aiming to bring together the largest producers and consumers in the internationally traded agriculture commodities. So this is sort of a diplomacy consensus-seeking initiative, but this is the international scene. And as you hear, there is initiatives, pledges still waiting to bear fruit. And because of that, I think it's fair to say that the most progress and concrete progress is currently happening at the bilateral, so between countries, or unilateral by countries level. So either through trade agreements or businesses and countries adopting measures that aim directly to production or imports and try to steer them towards sustainable direction. And that again brings us to the EU deforestation-free regulation.
Thanks so much for that overview. I think that really helped. And indeed, let's now talk a little bit about the EU. The EU is the world's biggest exporter and the third biggest importer of agri-food products. As a major economy and consumer of commodities linked to deforestation and forest degradation, the EU is also amongst the main contributors to this problem. Marianne, could you highlight some of the key measures that have been put in place by the EU to tackle deforestation? And of course, related to this, why do you think the EUDR is so important?
The EU has taken a two-avenue approach to global deforestation and sustainable agriculture more broadly. The one avenue is using its trade agreements to advance sustainable agenda. So we've seen EU taking more comprehensive and more explicit approach in its trade and sustainable development chapters, which are part of the trade agreement. Obviously, it is then a different outcome depending on a country when they've been adopted and negotiated. And some of those trade agreements now also introduce different new elements. We've seen a sustainable food systems chapter first appearing in the EU and Chile agreement in 2022, which is an interesting addition to the tools that the EU has at its disposal when it comes to trade agreements. And interestingly, EU has also recently shown that it's willing to use a dispute settlement mechanism that is part of these trade agreements and their sustainability provisions actively as well. And that's been shown in the case of South Korea and their labor rights. So that's the one route, which is the trade agreement bilateral or plurilateral route, as we call it. And the second route is the unilateral, so adopting measures that are very much intended to have a trade-related implication. And that's where the EU Deforestation-Free Products Regulation, EUDR, comes in. So it is a very much EU unilateral measure that EU is taking to regulate its own businesses to be more sustainable, but it has very significant trade-related consequences. So those two routes EU is currently taking. And maybe a third one is that EU is active in the multilateral discussion space at the WTO.
Thanks for that, Marianne. Could you tell us a little bit more about what the main features of the EUDR are?
The key objective of the EU deforestation-free regulation is that only deforestation and forest degradation-free products are allowed on the EU market. And the cutout date for this, for the deforestation, is end of 2020. So geographically, the regulation covers deforestation and forest degradation both in the EU and outside the EU. The way the regulation will work is through EU businesses. So it makes EU businesses responsible to ensure that what they put on the market in the EU has not caused deforestation or forest degradation. In other words, EU businesses need to do their due diligence to ensure this, and they will be monitored by national authorities. And key element of the EU businesses' due diligence is that they will need to put in place traceability of products and ingredients in their supply chain. And finally, the EU Commission will be supporting businesses by creating a benchmarking system to classify EU trade partner countries or parts of the EU trade partner countries' regions as either high, standard, or low risk according to the level of risk that products originating from this country or region might not be deforestation free. It is something that hasn't been tried before. And it is also very wide in scope. Because of that, it has a possibility to have a wide ranging impact on deforestation and on smallholders, which might also be a challenge.
Thanks so much for breaking that down for us, Marianne. I think you did a great job. And we've already talked a little bit about impact, but I want to now steer the conversation towards how the EUDR is being perceived by countries in the Global South or our partner countries. So we know that several countries in the Global South, as well as civil society organizations, have been expressing their concerns over the EUDR. They're highlighting the adverse impacts that it might have, as you mentioned, especially on smallholder farmers and small producers in these countries. So my questions to you are, how do you think that the EUDR is perceived by producer countries? And what are the main concerns that are being raised in this regard?
In short, the perceptions are mixed. The core concern when it comes to smallholders is that the regulation will result in excluding more smallholder farmers from global supply chains, simply because they do not have the resources to comply with all the requirements that it brings. And businesses importing to the EU might take their business elsewhere. Some of them have been heavily investing to orient themselves towards the EU markets in the past, including they've been part of some of the existing EU sustainability initiatives on sustainable timber or sustainable cacao, for example. A specific key worry that is commonly raised is the difficulty for smallholders to adopt and operate these necessary technologies or processes for traceability. So how will then smallholders be part of the system to be able to show that their really small plot of land indeed complies with this requirement? But stakeholders do also see opportunities, and they see that regulation can pan out as it is intended and really use EU market access as incentive and driver to make supply chains more sustainable across different commodities. The EU deforestation-free regulation can be an agent of change to boost know-how and investment that is not only commodity-specific. So ideally, EU deforestation-free regulation will be providing knowledge and tech know-how that will improve resilience and flexibility of the smallholders. But for these opportunities to take place, everybody agrees that they need investment. And definitely they need investment from the EU and EU businesses to take this forward. Where this balance between concern and opportunity will land, that still remains to be seen.
Marianne, you've shared about the opportunities and risks and what you think the possible outcomes could be. I wonder if you had any specifics you could share with us in terms of what the EU can or what the EU is doing to best support these smallholder farmers and producers in countries in the global south.
Indeed, I've picked up three key words here. The first one is what EU can and should do is provide more clarity on what complying with the regulation entails. It has been now providing these information sheets, the FATQ initiative that is provided, which has been very helpful, but it feels it's a bit late. So the train left the station quite a while ago with a lot of speculation. So hopefully we will catch up on that very soon. And also it's really not sufficient to disseminate this information at the highest of level. It really needs to be going also to the smallholders, and we're not quite there yet. Finance is the second thing. So EU really does need to provide the finance and long-term partnership vision to support the producer countries to make the shift. And also while providing the smallholder support in the countries, it will be important for the EU to make sure that it focuses on capacity building so that the producer country itself immediately starts to gain capacity to respond to the deforestation-free regulations requirements. And then third thing is diplomacy. We do need to try to change the perceptions of the EU deforestation-free regulation and make sure that the impacts will be supportive of the smallholders and the countries and countries' socioeconomic situation as well very quickly. EUDR has been perceived and continues to perceive much more sticks than it provides carrots, but it's very timely now to do that, bring in the carrots, because otherwise the perceptions will not change and there will not be clarity as to how to implement it in a way that is supportive of the producer countries.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for that. I feel like you've really given us a very clear idea of what the situation is now. And we just have a final question for you, which is if you have a message for the youth or civil society or partner countries about how to effectively tackle deforestation and the environmental impacts of agri-food, for example.
We would all need to become slightly more trade literate. What I mean by this is that trade policy and trade policy instruments have long been a niche that people working on the social or environmental sustainability side of things haven't really tapped into as a possibility to work for sustainability as effectively as we could have. So being able to have a bigger group of experts that is tapping into these discussions and able to show these opportunities to countries would be important. So that would be my message to help to then also address sustainability of agriculture and these supply chains moving forward.
I really appreciate your emphasis, Marianne, on simplifying the legislation and what you've just shared in terms of more people need to learn and understand about trade. That's, I think, a really important and very positive message to end on. So that brings us to the end of our interview. Thanks so much again for joining us, Marianne, and giving us a really clear understanding of the EUDR, what's at stake, and what still can be done.
Thank you, Gail. It's been a pleasure.
Dear listeners, thanks for listening to the fourth episode of Rethinking Europe, a podcast by Europe Jacques Delors. Europe Jacques Delors is a Brussels-based think tank dedicated to environmental sustainability in Europe. Thanks to a dynamic team of policy experts, Europe Jacques Delors conducts high-level research on greening agri-food and trade, as well as ocean protection and governance. If you'd like to learn more about the EUDR, check out the resource Grade 4, Deforestation-Free Agri-Food Supply Chains. Will the new EU regulation be up to the challenge? On our website, www.europejacquesdelors.eu. We'll also soon be launching the findings of our collaboration with TradeHub in an upcoming policy brief. So stay tuned.